Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood,
Matthew Davis,
and the Roto Gut, Vlad Sedler.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. This is our third episode, and we're recording on January 17th. I'm here with my co-host, fellow SoCal brethren, Matthew, Matty Wood, Davis. And just real quick, want to tell you guys about our preseason coverage. Our loaded five-tool fantasy baseball draft kit includes a 130-page draft guide with many of your favorite guests. We're still on early bird special, 20% off at ftnfantasy.com/pricing. Lots of cool articles out right now. Juice worth the squeeze, Matthew Davis's article, Brock Miller's Draft Champions Strategies After 450, Cup's Corner, Closers with Matt Kupferle, and a new one starting this week, Sinking Your Battleships with Matt and Matt, NFBC Positional Tiers starting next week, and the VDP. So it's a VDP day. What's up, Matt?
I'm rubbing my hands in excitement right now because I feel like John Travolta in the movie Pulp Fiction, where he's got the briefcase, he's got the code to the briefcase, and he unlocks it, and there's this like shining gold light, and we don't really know what's in there, but it's the VDP, baby, and I got early access to it, and I had the chance to sift through it, and I'm really excited to dive into that. Let's not short our listeners, though. Today is not the 17th. It's the 18th. We are all on holiday week, so forgive Vlad on shorting us a day. And things are unraveling day by day, even though there isn't off-season news. There's no free agency acquisitions happening right now, but there are drafts that are occurring over at the NFBC. Vlad, I know that you're 30-plus rounds into your $1,000 NFBC draft and hold, and I am currently in the 17th round of my 400 NFBC draft and hold, or better known as the 4-honey. And even Mike the Mouth, shout-out to him if he's listening. You got to give the guy credit in the off season for trying to keep things going, keep the community going in the industry, creating his own draft and holds and everything in between. So it's an exciting time of the year.
Do you think Mike the Mouth listens to other podcasts, or do you think he just listens to his own podcast on repeat?
He probably just listens to the podcast that he's on and then mutes whoever's talking to him and then just listens in the mirror to himself so he can fine tune things for the next time.
Yeah, he is. He's a good guy. He's a very funny guy, and putting together some big drafts this season. But yeah, I mean, we're really just gaining momentum. I'm just really feeling the spirit of draft season. Everything, all the excitement on Twitter. Like, everybody's getting involved. We have a fantastic industry with just, you know, so many wonderful people, and it was fun today. I just randomly posted a poll that was really sort of geared towards what we talked about last week, even the week prior, Jose Abreu, and how I just feel that at pick 90 overall, to me, it feels really egregious. And I understand RBIs are just one category. I know, you know, and he's led the league in that in it since 2019, but still a loaded lineup around there. But you know, there are a lot of people that just aren't interested in first baseman in those range, in that range. I mean, even ahead of Abreu, who goes around out in the 80s, maybe pick 90, you got those three guys, Matt Olson, Pete Alonso, a couple of big bashers there, and then Paul Goldschmidt, just like incredibly solid. He's always going to be in the lineup, healthy, productive, and those guys are going in the 50s and 60s. So I posted a poll on the four of those, pretty much knew what the results would be, which ended up being Matt Olson first there out of, I think, 2,500 or so people that pulled in on that. Pete Alonso next, but a lot of people, I mean, I saw Jeff Zimmerman pop in with a comment like, oh, great. People are drafting those guys there because he's apparently not interested. And I feel like that's the case for a lot of people where, hey, it's a nice little burst of power for your lineup there in the fourth, fifth round, if you need it, especially if you're looking at Olson or Alonso. But it just doesn't seem to fit the draft plan for a lot of people. There are, you know, people talking about the guys available later in that category and or in that position. And just, you know, a lot to think about. We can do this all day with every position, but it's just super loaded. My point really being that was really geared to see how people would react to Abreu and how much they would be sort of being influenced by ADP, and the results pretty much stuck out to me with him being last in that poll.
I've got a fork in the road with Jose Abreu. So on one side of things, in my $400 NFBC DC, Paul Goldschmidt was drafted with pick 46, and I drafted Jose Abreu at pick 91. So that's a three-round difference, actually, pretty much square on. And I almost kind of now have buyer's remorse on Jose Abreu, even though we are kind of, you know, you and I have both discussed about Abreu, and we think that the draft costs shouldn't be so as far apart as they are. But maybe I should have went with Brian Reynolds or Jesse Winker or JD Martinez, some of those other guys, because when I do look at some of the other first basemen, and it's not like you do just get a pluck from a tree and choose them, but there are some guys that maybe do grade out similarly that are even cheaper if we keep going down in steps in comparisons. And, you know, a Jared Walsh, a Josh Bell, a CJ Krohn, could they potentially perform, you know, with a similar range of outcomes to Jose Abreu? And I think that answer is possibly or could be a yes. So it does have me questioning the investment that I just made on Jose Abreu. But then the flip side of things, like you're saying, should he be going 45, 46 picks after Paul Goldschmidt? I don't think that that's fair at all either.
Yeah. And I mean, unless he gets hurt, I really don't see a way that that buyer's remorse is really going to stick with you. I mean, just looking alone, and again, and maybe I'm beating a dead horse here, but like, you know, since the beginning of 2019, 300 RBIs. The person that's 10th in the league or over that span of time, it's actually Bryce Harper and JD Martinez. Abreu had 70 more RBIs over them in that span. And I think one thing that sometimes people might look over, and something that I really like to sort of dive in on and strategize on, is team context. Like, what are the offenses that I want to get players from in relation to cost? I remember a few years ago, it was like the Arizona Diamondbacks, all those David Peralta's, AJ Pollock's, those guys were going after 200, 250, and I kind of liked the offense. And so I would just sort of pick and pluck those players later on, ended up working out, and it obviously doesn't always, but there's some nice prices on these White Sox. Like, I honestly don't see a reason why they won't be another top five offense in baseball. Got hit with a lot of bad luck with Lou Bob, with Eloy Jimenez, and Yasmani Grandal. I don't know. I'm really into the offense. I like the prices that you're getting on these guys. And I don't know. At the end of the day, I'm not quite sure that you're going to end up with that buyer's remorse. I feel like the buyer's remorse sometimes comes from how the draft unfolds after that, where you realize like, if I'd taken this guy, I would have been able to take care of this, you know, category. I would have been able to get some steals that I couldn't get later that I was expecting to get.
It's funny how you prepare yourself for these drafts. You get ready, you do all the research, even in a slow draft. This is a 2-hour timer for each individual. And you know, just things like that do happen, and we do second guess ourselves. Ryan Roof actually tweeted something interesting the other day about that. And he tweeted, "Some days I feel like I'm improving so much in fantasy baseball drafts, preps, and process. Other days I second guess everything, every player, and feel like all drafts I've done thus far have been complete garbage." And I think that we all go through those, like, you know, those ebbs and flows of that while we're drafting. Sometimes it's just the matter of one player falling one spot to you, and you know, you making yourself feel a little bit better about yourself, and vice versa. So we understand, or at least I do, what Ryan's saying, because I feel like that all the time. After every pick I make, I kind of second guess myself.
We're human after all. I mean, even the very best players, everyone goes through this, and everyone will, not everyone will admit it, but they do, absolutely do, no matter what your confidence level is. The most important thing is that we are continuing to improve on our craft with every draft. Like, if you're starting to draft these DCs in January, by the time you get to February, you should be liking those teams better than the ones you were drafting in January, because you are now one more month ahead in your prep. You have a better idea of pockets of value. You have a stronger feel on certain players. So technically, those projections for your starting 14 hitters, starting 9 pitchers, should improve over the course of time, especially if you're tracking that and looking at it. But yeah, I mean, it's everybody goes through it. It's just something that, that, you know, that's absolutely natural. The most important thing to me is that we don't get hung up on certain players that, that are like are out. They're our guy in every round. It, you know, hey, there are targets for a reason, but it's okay. If you're doing a lot of these drafts, it's okay to go in a different direction, put yourself in a little bit of a, you know, a spot of uncomfort to see how other things would play out in other scenarios and different types of builds. We all have those players. They're like, oh, it's, you know, I'm just locked in at Cesar Hernandez every time I need a second baseman in, you know, the 21st round. Study in and look in, into it yourself. Why? You know, what is it about this player that I like? What are the alternatives in that range? And continue to basically question yourself in order to get to the right answer that's going to basically be that unlocking key come March when we're doing our serious drafts.
Yeah, that's well said. It's also, right, this just being comfortable with the opportunity cost. And I think when you mentioned when we move on further towards the sunshine, we start to eliminate players from this pool, right? We get a better grasp of like, no, I don't want anything to do with this guy. So it kind of, it helps, you know, not blur the line so much when you're drafting right now. And the pool seems just a little bit fuller or more full than I would like it to be.
And I mean, there's the whole other discussion about the crossing players off and really narrowing your player pool. For me, I definitely have those players that I'm just not interested in their profile, their team context in general. But a lot of it is price based. It's a lot of times based on this is what it, what the market dictates the, this person's price is, and I'm just not in. I'm just not interested at that price. There could be a case where if they were to fall a couple rounds and fits my specific roster build, then that's something that can work for me. That's something that that I can take advantage of. But for the most part, I'm always being, a lot more open-minded during this time of the year.
How do you shuffle doing multiple drafts at this time of year with slow drafts, so to speak? So you're in the $1,000 DC, and I believe you're in the 37th round, if I'm correct. And then you've also ramped up another DC, but that's just our standard $150 entry fee. And you started at a different draft spot than your first one. And, you know, that one's obviously a little bit earlier on right now. So how do you shuffle doing multiple of those while tracking categories and everything in between?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say that this is my first 1K draft champions that I had hopped in last week, 37th round. And man, it's such a pleasure to be drafting against these girls and gals, just like absolute monsters, and just hashtag strategery that is going on with every pick. Like everything just feels ever so magnified, and it's really fun kind of battling with these people. The thing is, I hop into the 150, and man, this is loaded with a lot of friends on Twitter, friends in person, analysts, and this thing is loaded too. So it's a different animal in terms of where I'm drafting from, because in the 1K, that's where I started off with Juan Soto at pick 5. In this 150, I'm pick 11. Again, I didn't get to set my KDS in time because I had a meeting, and then it just kind of flipped. It was a very short turnaround time. People signed up for the draft real quick. So I pop in with 11, and I know that, you know, the saying, or at least the saying that I use, real G's can draft from anywhere. You just dominate from whatever spot you're given, but we have preferences. And so for me, 11 really isn't one of those. And I just sort of knew I would be having more difficult decisions. It may be more uncomfortable, which is fine. But when I got that first pick, and Shohei Ohtani was there, I really had to think about it. There is a lot of concern. I mean, at least for me, it's just that's something, that innate feeling of somebody who just went off like that, and being a first rounder, the likelihood of him busting, something happening on, you know, with the injury history that obviously didn't hit him last year. Just so many things. But at the end of the day, I believe Walker Buehler was taken before me, who I would have considered start off with a pitcher and then bang the hitters out. But I said, let's go for it. Let's do it. Let's see what comes from it. Ended up going with Mike Trout in the second. He fell there to 21st overall. I'm like, all right, I got myself a little mini mini angel stack. And then from there, it was a really tough pick. So I wanted to ask you about this. In the third round, this is pick 36. And I'm sorry, it's pick 41. And three closers are off the board. Hader's gone. Hendricks is gone. And I'm looking at, and Iglesias is gone. So I'm thinking, I don't like the pitchers in this range. I just saw Bieber, Nola, and Ray pop off the board. For me, it's too early to go Lance Lynn. I don't want to go with Chris Sale here. So I'm looking at either really banging out the hitters and trying an extreme strategy, or I'm going to grab one of the closers. So that's what I ended up doing. In the third round, Emmanuel Clase, really tough call, actually, between him and Ryan Pressly. But you know, a lot of people aren't going to be comfortable with that. I understand in later drafts in February, March, that are with Fab. People aren't really, you know, a lot of, I think that closer market will kind of drop down a little bit when we get clarity in other roles. But I don't know. Have you been taking closers early at all? Like, how do you feel about that? There's just something feels innately wrong about clicking on Emmanuel Clase in the third round.
It does sound weird, but with the current landscape, it might not be so weird. I've ended up landing, I think I'm now in my fourth draft this winter, maybe fifth, and I'm pretty sure all but one team has Josh Hader. So I'm used to hedging a little bit early on in drafts, but if Josh Hader is going to be available to me in the second round, I'm likely going to be taking him. If I'm not drafting, you know, somewhere on that turn and I end up with like Ronald Acuna and Brandon Woodruff, for example, or Garrett Cole and Luis Robert or whatever the combination may be. I'm okay with it, to be quite honest with you, because especially in these drafts and holds with no Fab, you are going to need somebody that's solidified. You might get some pushback from somebody about Class A, but I just really don't understand why they would. Everything just in line, and how do they run their bullpen, or how do they manage things? And Tito likes to have his guy, and Clase is his guy. So I'm good with it. I am.
Yeah. And obviously what, before you're making that selection and when you're in a slow draft and you have the time, you can map things out a little further. You can get a feel for how your league mates are drafting. You may even know some of them. You may even know some of their draft tendencies. And you can sort of get an idea of what you're looking at in those next couple rounds to really solidify that building block, those first few picks of the team. And I think that's very important, something that you have to think about. You can't just sort of click on, this is the best player now, or, you know, let me grab a closer now because I don't know when I'm going to get my first one and I might get sniped. I may end up with no closers. I mean, I remember very well my draft champions team that was 15th overall last season. It really needed some saves. And perhaps I'm overcompensating, but I just remember I was like, man, just popping Ottavino in the lineup every week towards the end there, trying to gain some steam. And obviously he wasn't getting those opportunities. But I was like, okay, I'm going to sort of work on my weakness. And obviously it was a little bad luck with that team. But I want to be able to overcompensate and grab some guys that I think could get save opportunities this year. But when I took Clase, and this is what I wanted to ask you, there were a ton, just a gaggle of fantastic hitters that I would have been comfortable with grabbing, you know, grabbing with that third pick. Two overperformers from last season. I don't know if call them over, but two guys that are very hyped this year, Cedric Mullins and Marcus Semien were both there. Aaron Judge was there. Tyler O'Neill was there. Bogarts, Lindor, there's so many good options. And I was like, you know what, because I know I have a pick coming up in nine picks and I want to just grab a closer, solidify some saves, so I don't have to worry about it for a while. Let me do that. And I'll just grab one of those hitters. I won't get greedy. I'll grab one, whoever I like this, whoever fits my team there. Okay. So that's my question. That a good move? I ended up getting Lindor.
So that looks like that worked out for you well, but it's obviously in hindsight, because I'm going to ask you, well, which closers were available for you in the fourth round, you know, you picking from the 11th spot? Was Diaz, Pressly, yeah. who was available there? And then who were those hitters? You mentioned some of those guys. Was Marte, was Story there? I highly doubt it. But if there was something like that, I think it's sifting through those specific hitters that you really want in that range. And then weighing which other closers would be available. So I think you made out okay, especially with getting Lindor in the fourth round. Is that pick 50 overall?
50.
Yeah, I think that's you made out nicely there. I'm okay with that.
And there's also some uncomfort, and obviously everybody's different, but when you're 3-4 picks in and you don't have your starting pitcher yet, and then you realize that at some point in the middle of the draft, you really need to make up for the fact that you don't really have that ace, don't really have that 200 strikeout guy, and you got to hit it at some point. So on that team, I ended up with Jack Flaherty, who hasn't been really relevant since 2019. But if you recall at that time, people were talking about, is it Buehler or Flaherty who's better? Anyways, he may never get to Buehler levels, but he can easily out-earn a fifth-round draft slot. So I got him in the fifth. I got Darvish in the seventh. So at the end of the day, when I'm looking at that team, I was ending up feeling pretty comfortable at that as those two guys as my first two. And then, as a matter of fact, I got Altuve and Giancarlo Stanton as well. So that's through eight rounds. That's Ohtani, Trout, Clase Lindor, Flaherty, Altuve, Darvish, Stanton. And I'm happy about that. Maybe, you know, batting average, I guess, stands out. Strikeouts, maybe not all that great, but hey, it's a base and I just build from there.
The one pushback I would give is you might actually be going that many rounds in a little bit light on stolen bases, but there are some ways to recoup that in the middle rounds. I'm pretty confident in that when looking at some of this, the players that are going in rounds, let's say 10 through 15.
Well, speaking of stolen bases, something I wanted to ask you, I know that in your 400 DC, you drew the number one overall pick and you took Trey Turner, who's essentially the consensus. You've seen some people take other players there to tease and some others, but that's my question. Say you had to draft your main event now, and you had two main events, both from the number one pick, just a, you know, what if scenario. Do you take Trey Turner first overall in both of those, or do you diversify?
Being that it is on the turn and I know that I'm able to select at least the first person on the board, I would actually do two different builds and go from there. So if you have the first pick, I guess you don't have to really like hide your cards, right? You can lay them all out there. So, I would go Trey Turner in one. Let's hypothetically say I was in Las Vegas on a Friday and on a Saturday, and I had both 1-1s. I'd go Trey Turner in one, and I'd go Garrett Cole in the other, and I'd build from there.
Nice, nice. I like that.
Just because of, you know, possibility of injuries and, just that in general, because I've had that problem before. I think I mentioned it the first time we recorded. I left a live event weekend in Las Vegas with all three first round shares, or, you know, if you equivalent that to auctions as well, in Chris Bryant. And that was a year that he had a shoulder issue, et cetera. And if you don't hedge like that with draft capital that early, it can come back to bite you pretty good.
Yeah. And that's it's also, I guess, what we talked about last week as well, where wiser to diversify a little bit in those earlier rounds, because when the draft opens up and you're still going to end up on a lot of your targets, you can, you know, pop one around early, a couple rounds early if you want, and really get your guys. But you're absolutely right. I know a lot of people have been in a similar situation over the years, drafting at the back end, where a lot of times, or over the last few years, that's where all the good pitchers were. I remember it was like, you know, Verlander, Scherzer, like all those guys. And a lot of people were left holding the bag when Verlander went down. That was that was a really big blow. And so the teams that went Verlander times two from their back end pick were basically really behind the eight ball for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's brutal. I think it's all just the draft capital, right? It's how much is the capital itself in that player. The further you go down the draft, I think it becomes more acceptable to load up, so to speak, right? Just gobble them up like Pac-Man. Just add to your profile all day. Just blah, 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 blah. Whatever you want. Because if something doesn't work out, knock on wood, if it's a pitcher and it's Tommy John in the 16th round, F it. throw them out. You missed, you lost somebody, but it's not somebody that's going to be some sort of substantial blow, so to speak, to your team. So, yeah.
So closers, wanted to, one of our main topics of discussion today, and closers, closer strategy, we've already sort of touched on it, but really digging into some of these guys and something that we've been doing as we've been drafting. I guess before we get into those mid-round guys, I wanted to just praise Ryan Pressly. I don't know how you feel about him, but like, the guy's legit good. He's been amazing for like 4 years. He had obviously some injury issues. What was it? A little bit in 2020. Last season, pitched 64 innings, but like, man, the guy's insane. Strikeout rate over 32% the last couple of years. Walk rate probably a little above average, I guess you could say. Whip under 1 in each of his last 2 full seasons. Throws heat, gets hit a little bit hard, but which badass closers really don't. And just, he's just really solid. And I feel like Houston, that's one of the things that I wanted to ask you was, say you would expect the same ratios from both Emmanuel Clase and Ryan Pressly. Do you lean Pressly because he's on the better team and you just assume more save opportunities and just because he's done it for longer? Or I guess my question is, what is it about Clase? Is just more sexy because he throws 101 mile per hour heat? Is that what it is? Is that why he's kind of going a little bit more ahead of Pressly in drafts right now?
Well, he's not 33 years old, but I got to say, I seriously would not be shocked if Ryan Pressly ended the season being the second best closer ahead of Liam Hendricks, with Josh Hader, being the number one, the el numero uno. But I really like Pressly. He helped Zach Betancourt and I win a NFBC main event in 2020, and he's a beast, dude. And knowing Dusty Baker and the landscape and what we have in Houston, why wouldn't you like this? I don't think that there's many question marks. There's not as much threat for opportunity, outside of him. Yeah, exactly. So I just think when you factor in like a SWOT analysis, strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, it's just, he's good to go. So, I'm all aboard the Ryan Pressly train. I would prefer him actually, above Emmanuel Clase, even though he isn't as sexy. I just think he's just a tiny bit safer, right? Yeah. And albeit no closer is safe, you could talk to Rob Silver about that. I'm sure he could take you down a deep, dark path with that. But I feel just a little bit more comfortable with Ryan Pressly.
You're a Dodger fan. I'm a Dodger fan. We know our teams well. We try not to let our fandom get in the way too much of our fantasy, because at the end of the day, I mean, you don't want to call it a business, but we want to make decisions that are objective, and we don't want to let that love for our team sort of get in the way. And I know both you and I have talked about being a little harder on some of their players on our own team, and because we know them better, and it's, we're not just blindly snatching up all the Justin Turners and Cody Bellingers because they're Dodgers, or, I'm going to push up Corey Seager because he's a former Dodger or whatever it is. But we've had an interesting ride with Kenley Jansen, but it's been a good one. It's been an absolutely fantastic one. And last year there was some doubt coming off a couple of, the 2020 season that, basically he's had 3 straight seasons of a 3+ ERA, which is very un-Kenley-like, and people thinking he's done, the K rate's okay. But 222 last year, obviously Sierra, FIPS, XERAs don't quite match what ended up happening there, and he walked more guys. But I'm still thinking he's a solid pick, and for me, and that's regardless of whether he signs with the Dodgers or not. Like, he's going to, if he signs with Boston, Philly, Texas, wherever he is, he'll be the closer. And if he's with the Dodgers, he'll be the closer until he falters. But it's a lot of money, he's gonna be looking for a couple year deal, and I guess my question is, what's your comfort level with Kenley, and do you want us to resign him, or do you want to just let training run with the job?
Oh man, love Kenley Jansen. Will always be a big fan of him. No, those are all fair questions. They're good questions, actually. So he's currently, if you're looking at ADP over the last couple of weeks in the month of January, he's the eighth closer going off the board on average with an ADP of 74. And no, to answer your question, I don't want the Dodgers to re-sign him. I think that he's going to end up costing a little bit more than he should. I know that we did see some second half adjustments that stood out, and he became actually the old Kenley Jansen, right? He sold out a little bit for some more velo, added to his pitch mix, et cetera, and he looked even great in the playoffs for once. So I think that I would be really happy that he rode out, even though the Dodgers didn't win the World Series in 2021. He's leaving on a high note. There wasn't something nasty. I'm not left with some terrible skid mark of him blowing some sort of big opportunity in the playoffs, and we lost because of him. I like Blake Treinen, and I think that Blake Treinen is getting closer or near that 2018 self that we saw of him, and I don't, and we already have him under contract, and Kenley Jansen is going to cost a decent amount of money, and so I hope that he goes out there and he gets his. Go get it, you deserve it, but hopefully it isn't with the Dodgers. And wherever he does sign, he is going to be the closer. So if you're drafting him, I don't think you should have any concerns, because if a team's going to be paying what he's asking, it's because he's going to be their guy. So if you're drafting him, you don't need to second guess if he has the role. He's going to have the role wherever he signs.
And for FTN subs, to people listening, like I'm doing my digging, doing my own research through some of through some avenues, channels, and kind of interesting, in different from previous years, hitting more roadblocks, because even the beat writers, even people close to the team, even they are very sort of clouded by everything happening with the CBA, and there isn't as much clarity as we would like. Like even in with the Kenley Jansen situation, they would like to resign him. He would like to join them, but it may not happen. There's really just so much uncertainty, and we have to really take a stand. If we're, if you're a Blake Treinen guy and you feel very strongly that they're not going to resign him, and you go after Treinen, you're still going to have to pay a premium. But keep in mind that if for whatever reason, the day Kenley signs, that 150 overall on Blake Treinen is going to pop up probably like 100 spots or so. But it is a difficult situation, because not even the Dodgers know, not even Kenley knows what's happening, how that's going to all shake out. So we have to kind of consider these risks. Within that same division, I wanted to ask you, helium sometimes takes hold greatly. And obviously, Camilo Duval, we saw him firsthand in the playoffs and towards the end of the season. I mean, the kid is legit. Everything that we've seen in the minors, just an absolute badass, through and through, 99 mile per hour cutter, insane slider. He's fantastic. But I'm seeing him pop up top 100 overall in some drafts. He's got an ADP lately of about 120. And are we sold that he, I mean, have we heard anything at all that's like Camilo Duval is going to be our closer going forward? Like, is Jake McGee in his magical season, Tyler Rogers, who was unhittable, like, are these guys just not going to mix in for saves at all? Is it going to be Duval? I mean, how are you handling that?
Well, it's Gabe Kapler first and foremost, and we've never seen Gabe Kapler really just hand the ball to one guy. And so that's a huge concern for me first and foremost. And then you also saw guys like Jake McGee get the job done. You saw Tyler Rogers get his opportunity as well. He had 13 saves last season. And then there's other guys, like if you're in a draft Champions League and you're drafting, 40 plus rounds later, I think that there's some opportunities. We saw in some high leverage spots for Zach Littell as well. So the San Francisco bullpen is pretty stout when it comes to talent, and we have never seen Gabe Kapler and his management tendencies just hand the ball over to one specific guy. I know, going down late in the season with the games on the line and the Giants winning the NL West and going to the playoffs, you're seeing Camilo Duval get those save opportunities and whatnot. But if memory serves purpose, McGee was there as well, and there was other guys getting mixed in like Rogers. So that's just, it's too much for me.
And McGee was, I mean, in the second half of the season, it was pretty much McGee, which was very un-Kapler-like, just kind of letting him roll with it until really Doval came up and emerged. But yeah, it's difficult. I think we'll obviously have a much clearer picture in March, at least we hope. If he does it, at the end of the day, at 120 overall, like, even if he isn't like the guy, you'll probably get some fantastic ratios. You probably will get save opportunities, I guess. Wait a minute, though.
I got to see. This is the problem. Is last year we all started to say this and hedge it with Devin Williams, right? Even if you don't get this, even if you don't get that,
well,
we're chipping it. We're starting to shed too many things here already, and it's like, dude, they're just another reliever with some fucking good ratios. So,
well, that was my point. Right? That's where I was going with. At the end of the day, you're paying a high ticket price. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a eighth, ninth rounder, and I'm not saying he's not amazing. He's not a fantastic pitcher, but what are we basing this decision off of for such a high pick?
Yeah, it's almost like, aren't the Giants the Mariners when it comes to like bullpens and how many guys they have at the arms that have actually accrued saves over like the last year?
It's a matter of perspective. I mean, we're looking at Seattle. I do have some Kenny Giles, because I figured, hey, in the rounds where he's going, it's a little bit later. I know it's a bit of a stab. I know it's a little bit of a, you know, doing exactly what I shouldn't be and sort of making a pick with my heart. But that's what I'm doing. That's a personal decision. I don't know if it's necessarily advisable. I would probably say, hey, just stay away from Seattle's pen altogether, because you do have Kenny Giles, who hasn't really pitched coming off Tommy John all this time. Apparently he's in the throwing program, but we don't have much information on that. Probably take it easy with him early in the season. You've got Paul Sewald, who was fantastic last season. Drew Steckenrider, former Steckenriders from Miami. He was great.
You and I used to be Steckenrider characters, yeah. If I recall.
yeah. This is like when GIFs first came out and we were able to like pop in some Warren G ones, and it'd be like two likes, you know, like, you know, nobody gets it. But, yeah, sometimes we tweet for ourselves. But the pen is loaded. Andres Munoz, this kid looks
Diego fresh. Castillo, who I'm a fan of as well. Yeah. So yeah, it's, I think the Giants are kind of in a similar landscape. I don't know. It's scary, right? Yeah. If you start taking dart throws too early, I think that's when it becomes a problem, is when you're taking these dart throws, because that's ultimately what all of these guys are at this moment. That's all we have to take with it, is what did they do last year and what are we speculating as of right now before pitchers and catchers report. So
it's pretty clearly a risky pick. You know, we have to take some risks, but as we draft, we need to be conscious of those risks and making sure we're taking those leaps far and few between. You know, if you've got Mondesi on the team and Jared Kelenic, and you know, you're loading up on those type of guys, little Byron Buxton, you know, splash them in, and then you're, you know, hitting those Camilo Duvalls and Blake Trinans, you're really playing with fire. So it could pop. It could absolutely go bananas and just, you know, luck on your side, and you just flow and get to the top and beat a field of 5,000 people and win the DCs. More likely than not, it's probably not going to work out well. That's why mixing in some of those sort of your Paul Goldschmidt's, former Kyle Seegers, if you will, just those nice, boring, solid guys, needs to be a part of people's strategy.
Absolutely. I call that the Dave Potts method. Shout out to Cheese.
Yeah.
Yep. He'll kill you all day with some of those guys, but they're accruing stats.
Yep. And Dave is obviously one of the best. Mm-hmm. Want to ask you about Will Smith. So this is a little bit of like in my own head type of scenario where I was all in on him. I was for sure in my main events, I was going to get the guy. I was noticing that people weren't like crazy about him. There was some concern if he would be the guy. I was convinced. I was in on Will Smith. I was happy with the results for the most part. And then all of a sudden now I'm out. It's one of those like, oh, I got in, want to get out ahead of time. And I could be wrong on that. From my perspective, obviously, you know, very minor concerns. When you're looking under the hood, it's, you know, like what? FIP, XFIP was over 4, like a, you know, but the Sierra was around his ERA. It's fine. Okay. Walk rate near 10%. You can give him a little bit of pass for that. 6 blown saves, look shaky on occasion. Okay. But you know, he's a lefty in this bullpen. Just won the World Series. Bullpen's pretty loaded. I mean, obviously, I know Richard Rodriguez hasn't come back yet, but Luke Jackson, sub 2 ERA, used to close for them. Tyler Matzek, another lefty, is pretty badass. Kirby Yates will eventually get there, maybe sign someone. So, I mean, I don't know. I like Will Smith, but I just kind of catch myself not getting in on that at the current price.
It's tricky. The name itself doesn't sound that great, but when you start to open up the hood, he's compiling with Atlanta. He had a 17.5% swinging strike rate last year, 14.2%. You mentioned that they win the World Series. You also mentioned Jackson and Matzek, but ultimately at the end of the day, they keep going back to Will Smith. He was dismissed with the injuries in 2017, missed the full season, signs with the Giants, has a phenomenal 18-19, goes to the Braves, and it's pretty much 30+% strikeout rate or more. Last year, though, I will say that the walk rate did spike up a little bit, but I think the way that just Snitker and kind of filling out his demeanor, and now that they're World Series champions and he's kind of got that under his belt, I almost feel like he would just continue to go back to him. So I'm okay with it, but he's costly. If you're listening and you're not really aware of how expensive Will Smith is going in drafts, he's, going inside, I believe, the top 7 or 8 at the closer or slash reliever position. And we still do have an offseason. Is it possible that the Braves sign Kenley Jansen? I know that they're not really wanting to spend much money outside of Freddie Freeman, but there are maybe possibly outlets where he's not the guy, but I don't see that, to be honest with you. I think that he's pretty damn safe, and that's kind of what you're paying for in this. He's a top 80 pick, and if you're in a 15 team draft, fifth, sixth round. And we've seen in some of these higher priced drafts, not going to mention any names, but we've seen them go in the fourth round. And in some of those drafts, that's more of a main event fill, so to speak, we like to say. Don't be super shocked if you see Will Smith go in the fourth round or the fifth round, because the job security as of right now, it does look pretty secure to me.
I like it. That's a really good argument. I think you even swayed me a little bit. You know, sometimes we go a little bit of an extra mile to try to convince ourselves on something. And I think that just kind of goes bad. And I don't know. We'll see how it pans out. But like your argument to me, I think feels a lot more stronger. Whereas, me, I'm almost trying to find reasons to not like him because I was in on him last year and now I want to get out and, win some sort of contest that I'm only I'm playing. So that makes sense. Yeah, I like it. So Giovanni Gallegos, St. Louis, he looked great to me last year. I would love to be in on him. I would love to have some clarity on how that role is going to play out. One of the actual friendliest beat writers out there, Katie Wu for St. Louis, pre-chat with her. She, again, nobody has clarity. No one really knows how Seattle is going to manage that pennant right now. It's not something they're even thinking about. Matt Thompson, who's a very a smart analyst, Prospects Live, he knows the Cardinals as well. He has some doubt about how they're going to handle that bullpen too, instead of just, potentially giving Gallegos the job. What we do know is that they do want to give perennially injured Jordan Hicks a chance to stretch out into the rotation. And then same thing for Alex Reyes. Alex Reyes was like one of the best closers in baseball first half of last season. But I don't know. Everything just kind of, who knows, right? It's in January. We're talking in January here. But why wouldn't they just give Gallegos the damn ball and just let him roll with it, be a top closer?
I think they're going to. And I think the fantasy baseball industry might be galaxy braining themselves right now when it comes to Gallegos. It's going to be really hysterical if in a couple of weeks, somebody gives an eyeball gif and it's a screenshot of a $400 or a 400 DC or a $1,000 DC. And we see Casey Cha's a name in it. And then somebody gets a hold of the draft board. And then let's say the fifth round or the sixth round, Giovanni Gallegos is the closer that he takes off the board as he's jumping him with a new min. And now nobody's going to be guessing or asking the beat reporters or you know anybody else in between. It's like, oh, nope, okay, Gallegos is the guy. It just really takes somebody to have a little bit of conviction, right, for the whole industry to kind of be sucked in towards to buying into that role and what he's worth. So, you mentioned the team wanting to stretch out Reyes and Hicks, and that was the initial plan with both of them. And they are... I think it is Gallegos, dude. I really do. I mean, he was just so lights out. Why fix what's not broken?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the only point that was brought up is just about them wanting to just manage their bullpen in the wisest way, which could involve sometimes needing Gallegos to go a couple of innings and, you know, facing certain types of hitters. So that's something to consider. But honestly, if Hicks and Reyes are healthy and they're starting pitchers, I mean, it's really not a bad staff. If you can get Dakota Hudson, you know, recovered, Miles Mikolas, just eat a bunch of innings. You just added Steven Matz and you still got probably another, you know, above average season from Wainwright, and you get Flaherty back to ace status. It's not a bad rotation. So I can understand at some point, this just looks like a rotation that's going to need some help at some point, but It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And part of that is also just, I mean, man, how amazing is Jordan Hicks when he's healthy, when he's on, right? I would love to see that come to fruition.
Pete, we like to talk about that high leverage, you know, fireman role, et cetera. And that's what people have their concerns with Gallegos. But over the last month of the season, he accrued 11 saves, and none of those saves or outings came with more than an inning pitched. So that pretty much that fireman outing coming into high leverage, pitching more than an inning when it isn't a save, you know, role, that stopped early July. I think it is a small sample size, but I think that the sample size itself from what we saw trending, he's their closer. I like him.
One more guy I wanted to touch on before we move on. Joe Barlow for the Texas Rangers. And this just really feels like a situation. I mean, you spend a bunch of money on Seager and Marcus Semien, and then you have this guy, a relative unknown, as your closer. Doesn't this feel like a situation where they add somebody, where you do get like a Kenley type or, you know, just something like that? I like Joe Barlow. I mean, he's obviously been a solid prospect, and just, I mean, you look at his numbers in the minor leagues going all the way back several years. The guy is just obviously a little wild at times, but just amazing put away stuff. And always has had low ratios throughout his career. Check out his page. I mean, he's just been phenomenal. And he's shown, at least from what we saw last year, he's not like some kid. He's 25, maybe 26. I don't know. He just kind of has that like closer feel to me. So I think he can get the job done, but I wonder if Texas believes in him enough for that. And price wise, you know, if he's going not far from Blake Treinen, to be honest, 150, 170. I mean, what are your thoughts on him? What are your thoughts on them potentially signing somebody?
Yeah, I can't do it at all, to be quite honest with you. And you mentioned the age too, right? Last year was really his only stint in the major leagues. It was 29 innings pitched, so we're going to probably double that this year now that he's going to be a full-time big leaguer. But we did see some drawbacks in those ratios that you are mentioning. We've got a walk rate that was nearing 11%. And we even saw that in AAA as well. So that's not really solid for me. And then a guy that's supposed to be bullying minor leaguers, he comes into the major leagues. And for a reliever, his swinging strike rate's only 11.9%, albeit this is around 30 innings pitched. So we can't take too much from that. But this team's wanting to spend some money. And there is a ton of relievers. And it's not even just Kenley Jansen. He's the big fish right now. What if they trade for Craig Kimbrell? He's another option. I like Ryan Tepera. There's like Andrew Chafin, guys like that, that all have experience as well. I just think that there's too many, right? Go back to the 5-year SWOT analysis for a business: strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And he might have some strengths, but there are weaknesses with him having a double-digit walk rate. opportunities for other people to come in. I certainly think that's a part of it right now with the free agency. And so there's too many threats for him. So I'm not going to be spending he's part of that 11 through 14 round draft range that we talked about last week that I just don't want to take my, I don't want to take my reliever dart throw at this point of time when drafting, when we don't know the true landscape of each team. So I'm out.
First of all, I think this is great that we just sort of we're throwing out names here. Didn't plan on it, not in our outline, but and it's good that we're having different perspectives. But somebody like Rowan Wick, does he just feel more sort of confident for you? Because we pretty much know that the Cubs probably aren't going to sign a closer and the bullpen really isn't all that great behind him. Obviously, this Cody Hewer kid looks pretty awesome and he could grab the role, but I mean, do you feel a lot more confident with Wick if, say, their price was only a 2-3 round difference? Say that gap sort of, is no longer a gap.
Yeah, I do, especially if you're in a draft champions, because if you're cognizant of, let's say, Cody Hewer, that pick's going to come, let's say, 200 picks after you're taking Rowan Wick. So when you're, so to speak, handcuffing a reliever at that point, the draft capital isn't anything. So, I mean, you take that dart throw. If Hewer comes up and he never gets a save the whole season, but he's able to, you know, muster up a high strikeout rate with good ratios, then sure, you know, maybe he's something for you regardless. Or you just flat out either lucked out or just won your draw when you drafted Rowan Wick and he's the closer, right? Mm-hmm. There's so many things that can't happen, but I do like that there is less of a threat there because Chicago isn't, they're not bringing in a Corey Seager or a John Gray. They haven't spent nearly $400 million already before there was a cork put on the free agency due to the CBA lockout. So I do like Wick more. There's other guys like that, like Tanner Rainey. You and I were talking about him. I think that that's a similar opportunity to Wick, whereas Barlow's just costing too much more.
Yeah, that's actually a really good one. Tanner Rainey, a little sneak preview. He does pop into my VDP top 360, and I've seen him drafted outside of that a lot. And for me, just somebody, at least in Washington, a team that I expect to be pretty solid this year. I think they're... Phil last year, he won his championships and all of his leagues. And a big part of that was he was low on saves. I mean, this is all very well documented. And he needle in a haystack, picked out Kyle Finnegan right before the guy went on, you know, sort of a little mini epic tear of saves right when he needed saves. That was his weakest category. And nobody else was in on Finnegan that week that everybody, you know, that we had Fab other than him and Rob DiPietro. And it was pretty, pretty impressive to see that. But then obviously Finnegan faltered down the stretch. It didn't matter at that point. Phil didn't really need him. But Tanner Rainey was essentially injured for most of last season, kind of came on there at the, I mean, he does seem like he would be the sort of closer of the future, almost like Finnegan was somewhat of a stopgap for Rainey, as long as Rainey sort of has the right mind frame to be able to close games in the night.
Yeah, he looked pretty good in the second half. And at the end of the season, he was that guy that they did want to eclipse as the closer. 32.4% strikeout rate stands out to me. And I just think that the pedigree and everything in between for them, he's the guy. And yeah, shout out to Phil. There was other guys too, Ranger Suarez, before he kind of became some sort of hybrid that, you know, went into this starting pitcher role. Suarez got a few shots at getting saves, and Phil was surely as shit first in line for a dollar to get Ranger Suarez and some saves there as well. So the list goes on and on, and the dude knows when to cut bait. That's for
yep.
sure.
Yep. Yep. Let's keep it going here. We're show's almost done. We'll finish up with a bunch of other closer sort of questions that we have. Boston, Matt Barnes, everybody knows I kind of poop on Barnes, and that's kind of my own bad because I wasn't buying in last season. I was an Ottavino guy, and obviously that didn't materialize, didn't have that great of a season, but Matt Barnes held it down until had some arm issues, fatigue, and it just kind of didn't work out for him at the end. He could hold the role, but this just seems like a team that will either sign someone or maybe just, are they grooming Garrett Whitlock? I mean, he does seem to easily be their best reliever. Does this look like a job that's his? Because both of these guys are going sort of in the same range. And you're either, right, you're either Team Barnes or Team Whitlock or your team, I'm not touching Boston.
Don't we wish we knew somebody that knew Alex Cora and what he prefers? Because if you ask the geeks and the nerds, we're all going to say, this is what we want. This is what we want. We want Garrett Whitlock. But at the end of the day, sometimes it really doesn't matter what we want. And it's who the manager is going to elect. And I know that Barnes faltered at the end of the season. I have no exposure to Barnes as of right now. I have a little bit of Garrett Whitlock. I like his stuff much more. I think that he could prosper into being the guy. He's the sexier, flashier new toy, so to speak. But we don't know what's going on right now. There could be off-season talk that Barnes fixed something. He's talked to the Cora in the front office and they're going to do this or that. And lo and behold, he's back into that role, and that's what they want, and that's what they're going to do. They could also sign Kenley Jansen or trade for Craig Kimbrell. Why can't Craig Kimbrell go back to where he was elite? So the Boston Red Sox are always in buyer's mode, mm-hmm. So you have to be cognizant of that, and that makes it tough when we're talking about some of these roles in January. That's why I don't like taking these shots in rounds 11 through 14, 15 for these guys, because we really don't know. We're just guessing. If you know, we're being honest, we're just guessing. It's a guessing game right now. Who's going to be the closer on some of these teams? And I think that just goes back to the point as to why you should be more open to, if you're not open to, investing early in somebody like Liam Hendricks or Josh Hader.
What about the roster resource effect? Obviously, everybody is on it, but we're not going to see many changes to that in the coming weeks. And because of that, we're going to have scenarios where, and you know, I think you may know where I'm going with this. I brought him up in my ADP report, market report, is Pierce Johnson. He is listed as the closer on roster resource on Fangraphs for the San Diego Padres. Obviously, that's a very clutch job for whoever is going to have it. And right now he's at the top of that list. And obviously, there are a lot of candidates there. There could be a trade there as well. We know, you know, Trader Preller is always in business. So a lot can happen there. But like, do you really see? I mean, his range, ADP range, it was in the 400s. Now it's 336 to like 550. So we're starting to see him creep up a little bit. And that literally is just the effect of, you know, the roster resources, of roster resource having him listed as closer.
Yeah. Well, that. And to Steamer over on Fangraphs. So they have, let's see, they have 26 relievers projected for 20 or more saves. And Pierce Johnson is one of them. Also, aforementioned Garrett Whitlock is another one that is projected for 20 saves for them. So I think that that's gaining a little bit of steam as well when you look at some things. If you're, you know, going through a projection system and you see somebody pop for 20 saves, that's going to stand out to you. And then you see that they're pitching for the San Diego Padres. You're going to want a little taste of that, right? Or at mm-hmm. least a little thimble. So he is the second reliever on average being drafted right behind Robert Suarez. This is in the 400s of drafts. So the draft capital itself isn't anything significant. You have Robert Suarez, Pierce Johnson, Emilio Pagan, Drew Pomeranz, Luis Garcia, etc. So we really don't know, but what we do know is that AJ Preller loves to make moves and he's never settled and he's always in win now mode. So it's another case of what do we know? And we don't really know anything right now. So I would temper expectations, but when it's his ADP over the last 2 weeks is 424, mm-hmm. shoot, take your shot. If you like something you see metrics wise, or, you know, some underlining statistics or something that you think that is trending forward and you think that there's a potential role there, then yeah, go for it. I'm all for it at this price. It's not rounds 11 through 14 like we're talking about some of these other guys.
Let's close it off on the Miami bullpen. And you've got Dylan Floro in the mix, the former Dodger middle reliever who is
really... This is where Kenley goes, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
This is where Kenley signs.
It's been spoken. I like this.
Yeah, sorry to cut you off. Go ahead with
your spiel.
I really do think that Don talks his front office into bringing in Kenley Jansen. And I think that this is a team and an organization and ownership that is looking to ascend themselves with some youth. They don't have a lot of heavy contracts on their organization right now. I think it's a really good fit. It's a veteran that's been there in big moments, along with being there with Don Mattingly in some of these big moments. I think that it's a really good fit. And that's where I think Kenley goes.
Wow. So is that – so that's – would you do that if you were –
Kim NG. Yeah. Absolutely. She's ironically, she's comfortable with him as well, right? She has a relationship with Kenley. So, dating back to her days with Los Angeles Dodgers, I really do think it's the right fit. I like it.
So you're not on the Bender Boys team?
Anthony Bender? No. And I want to actually try and get him on our podcast at some point. One of my good friends from elementary school and high school growing up is one of his strength and conditioning coaches and works out with him in the Valley sometimes. So, love Anthony Bender. Big fan of him. FTN loves him. Big fan. Mm-hmm. Nice. Nothing negative to say about him, but I really do think that this is an organization that will look to make a move. And I really do think that they go out and get Kenley.
I love that, man. It's something I hadn't even come into my head, but it would make perfect sense. So I like that. I know Miami probably will make some splashes here as hopefully we get a little bit of more information of a season coming soon, because at the end of the day, that's what we need here. I don't care when it starts, obviously prefer opening day, March 31st, but just give us some damn baseball. VDP stands for Vlad's Drafts Positions. They are out Wednesday. By the time you're listening to this pod, you should be able to look at it, have instructions on how to use it, how to gander, and what to do with it. So we'll talk about maybe some of the players on that next week. And yeah, let's just, let's have a great week. Let's keep grinding, keep drafting, keep strategizing. And man, did every week, I just look forward to hopping on a pod with you, buddy.
I'm loving this VDP layout, by the way. I'm digging it, dude. It's consuming my time right now, so to speak, while I'm working on things behind the scenes.
I've been tweaking the sucker all week long, so it's just a start. It will be updated every week, but hope it's a good, helpful tool for your draft. So, any parting thoughts on this fine week in January?
Yeah, come join us if you haven't already. Come subscribe to FTN. I'm sure we've still got a 20% off discount. I believe you mentioned that earlier with the early bird special. It includes everything that we've discussed earlier. Matt Cufferly and I, by the way, that Cubs corner with the closer editions going division by division and whatnot has been getting a lot of love in the industry. I've been hearing a lot of good things about that. So shout out to Matt Cufferly doing a good job with that. I'm excited to be partnering with him in this Sink Your Battleship series that we're going to be coming out with, going round by round, talking about guys that could potentially ruin your team if you're spending too much early draft capital on them. And then tomorrow I have another Juice Worth Your Squeeze segment coming out, and that is going to be with Colton Wong going up against Josh Rojas. So look out for that. That will be available tomorrow. Yes, at ftnfantasy.com.
I know some Rojas haters, so I'm looking forward to reading that one. I hope Josh Rojas is not listening to the podcast, but if you do, I'll let you know who they are.
Okay.
So that's it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. For Matthew, Maddie Wood Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler, and this is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your host on Twitter at @MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.